Welcome back to Brain Body Movement, the podcast for those interested in everything nutrition, training, and mindset. One of your hosts, Brad, and I'll be joined by my co-host, Brock. Today's episode was a Q&A where we answered four questions that got sent to us through social media. Question number one, if I can only train early in the morning, does taking EAAs or BCAAs supplement break my fast? Question number two, should you try and hit your step target on training days? Question number three, do I need to drop my protein goals while cutting? I'm 5'1", so when cutting, my calorie budget is pretty small. And question number four, how can you balance a physical job and working out without going into overreaching and overtraining mode? That was in the back half of the show. And in the front half, we discussed the importance of celebrating the small victories, process versus outcome goals, Trump's new shoe line, the first Neuralink patient, and gave a couple of random facts. All right, enjoy the show. On the way to a grand goal, celebrate the smallest victories as if each one were the final goal. No matter where it ends, you are victorious.
Bit of confirmation bias with this unsolicited advice, hey? We talk about this ad nauseum. Every little thing that you achieve, like you've got your grand goal, and then you should have little tiny goals that move you towards that grand goal along the way, and you should acknowledge and celebrate all those little small victories along the way for many, many reasons. One, even if you don't get to the grand goal, you've had all these victories that you can celebrate along the way. And two, their motivation. That's by being disciplined, sticking to the plan and achieving the first little small goal. It's motivating. You're like, oh, I've accomplished this. Okay, now on to the next. Okay, I've accomplished this. Now on to the next. So I'm a big fan of this unsolicited advice. It's something we preach all the time. So
Yeah, it's you got to set your milestones. Obviously, just ambitious enough that you will hit them, and then your massive goal at the end. Because when you reach the said goal, you hear it time and time again. Everyone's like, "Oh, all right, what's the next goal now?" And it feels a bit fleeting when you do reach that big goal and you haven't celebrated all the other ones, because you're like, "Well, I've been going for this goal for ages, and then I finally reached it, and it's like, now what?" And you can almost get depressed because you got nothing to strive towards. Whereas if you had like mini goals throughout building up, you're like, yes, let's go, and it keeps you motivated. And then when you do reach that goal, you've had all those victories before you, and of like how it actually feels, you know. And now I feel like even more accomplished. And then you strive for another goal. And then you won't feel so empty inside, because you're like, no, I actually celebrate this journey. And we talk about the journey a lot instead of just going for the goal. Like, because everyone knows that, like, well, not everyone, but like when you are striving for a goal and you are always thinking about it, you're like, say, let's go for weight loss, like 20 kilos, or I want to hit a certain amount on the scale. And you're unhappy until you reach that goal. And you're like, well, today I didn't hit it. Today I didn't hit it. Instead of going, well, today I went to the gym, that's a win. Today I ate well, that's another win. Instead of thinking outcome, we think process. Goals. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this is, yeah, such great advice, because I think people do like doing hard things. And sometimes they're like, suffering, as bad as that sounds, some people do like, oh no, I got to keep going and stuff, and they can kind of play the victim of people like, oh yeah, you know, you're doing so well, like, and you're like, no, I'm not, I got to keep going, kind of thing. And it can get like, I don't know, a bit iffy when you're always like, I don't want this to be the only goal that I'm striving towards, kind of thing. So yeah, I think no matter what, you are victorious, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm going to go purely selfish here and relate this back to me. So when this episode drops, it will be day one of 12-week marathon prep. So I will have a specific goal. Now, I've been doing lots of running in the lead up to this. Now, why have I been doing that? I just want to make sure that when I'm standing there at the start line race day, I am fully confident that I finish those 42.2 kilometers. So I've just been, I don't know, building a body of evidence, I suppose. Now, I've got the long goal is completing the marathon. But before training here, like for this marathon, I'd never run over 10, maybe 12K, maybe 15. Like, I'd never run over those distances. Probably 10, I'd never run over. Each long run I did, it was like, yes. And when I got to that point, it's like, oh, I'm now pushing into new territory. And I said this to Mitch. I was like, each time I set off on a long run, it's like, wow, this is the furthest I've ever run. Oh, wow, this is the furthest I've ever run. And I was like acknowledging and celebrating that each and every time I was running. Whereas most people would be like, oh, it's just part of the process to get to the end goal. No. That's worth acknowledging. Like, that's the furthest I have ever run to this point. Wow, that's a PB. Okay, next one. It's like in the gym, right? People in the gym, they'll celebrate when they hit a new PB, but that's been their goal is to hit the PB, not the processes along the way to get them to that PB. But yeah, outcome and process. I think that's the key there. But yeah, relating it personally, it's been very important for me because otherwise I can just get lost in the, oh, I've got another long run. It's like, no, every time I've set out now, it's like, okay, I've got a new longest run. I've got a new PB. When I accomplish this, it will be something new and worth acknowledging and celebrating a small victory.
Yeah, of course. And like when you're in the gym, I remember when I train clients, and especially when they first come in, like they're hitting PBs left, right, and center. Like they've set out their goals, and it's like, all right, on the way to that goal, we're just going to increase the weight and increase the reps, or do an extra set, or form is better, or it felt easier to them. All these things are wins, and there was just fist bumps like going everywhere because of the amount of times I would just say to them, well, that's a PB, let's go. And it would motivate them more to keep going instead of like going into the gym and go, well, I didn't hit my PB, or I didn't hit my weight this week. Like, that's, you can lose what you're actually striving towards because it feels like, yeah, you're failing every single day. So you do need these small little victories. And it's good to aim really high. Sometimes at the start, I think you just need to aim a little lower, so then you actually hit it and then bring on some extra motivation, and then you can go and strive for a lot bigger goal as well. Because there's always going to be more goals from when you complete your next one, or else you'd be like, what do I do now? It's like, and you can just change it up. Doesn't always have to be like, you could have multiple goals going at the same time, and it might just not always be in fitness. It might be in relationships or with money or something like that. And you're like, oh, you know, I can save this much this week, or you know, I earned this much this week, or I had better conversations. All these kind of things, instead of just like, I've got this one dedicated goal, and that's what I'm gonna. I guess bodybuilders do that, but powerlifters. But it's good because you have multiple goals, and I think trying to find the small wins here and there is very important.
And I think that's why we're both advocates of not focusing on the scale so much. Or I'm at the point almost where it's like at all. Like if you're feeling better, clothes are feeling better, you're stronger in the gym, you're noticing better performance cognitively, whether that be at work or you're noticing you're more relaxed as a parent. Like these are all way better metrics for success than just a number on the scale. If you optimize for a lower number on the scale, you'll often do unsustainable things in order to achieve that. And then what happens when you stop doing those unsustainable things? The weight comes back on, and you get in this negative loop of like, oh, the scale, the scale, the scale, the scale. So, rather than having like the And the thing with the scale as well, right, is people envision their weight to a certain body composition or physique. It's like that physique or body composition that you've envisioned at this certain weight probably looks actually vastly different, and it's probably significantly heavier than the weight that you've got wrapped up in your mind. So that's why it's good to have multiple data points when you are trying to fat loss, performance, muscle building, like to have multiple data points to pull from to be like, okay, am I trending in the right direction? Okay, this one doesn't look like it's doing too well for me right now. Let's look at the others. Okay, the other four data points that I'm tracking all say I'm going in the right direction. That's a bigger body of evidence. Let's follow that rather than this one data point over here.
Because the thing is, as well, Your ideal body weight might not look the way you want it to look. So say for like women, you're like, oh, I want to get, 60 kilos or whatever. But you might look even better at 65 with muscle. You could get down to 60, but you might look too skinny. But like building up some muscle, 65, 70 even, 75, 80 even, who knows? And yeah, I think it is the look that most people go for because no one's really going out and showing off like what they weigh, do they? They're like, oh, I weigh
No.
this much today. It's like, no, you're showing
No.
off your body the way. And then strength numbers, I guess, can count because they're like, yeah, I lift this much or I hip thrust this much.
How much you bench, bro?
How much you bench, bro? Exactly. It's very caught up. But it's like, how strict is it? I prefer dumbbells, these days.
Nah, that's true. Like, in 10 years' time, you won't remember what you weighed on February 27th of 2024. So, why are you so concerned about it now? That's the way I've always that's the way that I have always viewed that.
You remember, I guess, how you felt.
Yep. Especially if it's like on vacation or holiday. Like, if you're on a holiday and you're like, oh, I want to be this weight before the holiday, I guarantee what you remember about that holiday is not what you weighed before you went on holiday. It'll be the confidence that you felt within your body to wear a bikini or put a pair of budgies on by the pool, or the fact that you managed to maintain your habits that you created that got you to a body composition that you feel confident in whilst on holiday. It could just be something about the holiday, like creating memories with families, friends, children, whatever it may be, a proposal. They will be the things you remember, not what you weighed.
No, because if you look back at the photos as well and you go, oh, I wish I looked like that. Like, well, were you in
It's
a good
common.
place? Yeah, were you in a good place when you look like that? It's like, I want to get back to my, high school weight or whatever it is. And you're like, well, how did you actually feel when you did that? Like, if you're in the gym, hitting it hard, getting strong, and feel good, they're the moments that you got to remember of like, I, because most people just want to feel good, and then when they feel good, they look good. Is that right? I guess they have a better self,
Quite often,
yeah,
quite often that is the case. Like, if someone's feeling good,
self-acceptance.
yeah, if someone's feeling good, they're likely making good food choices. They're likely looking after their body and they're moving it, and they're probably doing a little bit of strength training. They're probably looking after their mental health as well. A side effect of that is you probably look pretty damn good too. I mean, that's pretty common knowledge, I feel. Is it Chris Williamson? If you want to do something for the body, do something for the mind. If you want to do something for the mind, start with the body.
Yeah, I don't know. You're the quote master of him.
I believe it is. I believe that's a Chris Williamson, or maybe it's just a quote that he's, right? Maybe we can attribute it to Einstein, seeing as a nearly every quote is
Yeah.
attributed to Einstein.
It's true.
But he got asked by what's his name? It's not Piers Morgan. Maybe it was like a British like TV show host. Of like, if someone needs to prioritize something first, is it their physical strength or their mental strength? And he answered physical strength. He goes, because if you want to do something for your mental strength, you can do it by being physical. So he goes, you can essentially do two birds, one stone. But there is a counter to that of like, what if you don't have the mental strength to go and do something physical? So yeah.
Chicken and the egg, I guess.
Exactly. To take a complete and utter left turn, we'll go from Chris Williamson, who I think is one of the best interviewers, podcasters, thought leaders in the world at present, to Donald Trump.
Oh. Are you going to bring up that thing that he said in the in his speech?
No, I'm actually going to bring up his shoes.
Okay.
Did you see his shoes?
I haven't seen his shoes, no.
So he released a shoe brand. As Trump would, and they are like gold with like a American sort of theme style to them, so like a blue red star stripe sort of thing.
Right.
He only made 1,000 of them, sold them for $400 a pop. So what's that like 650 Australian, 600 Australian,
Yeah.
and completely sold out.
Trying to find his shoes, Trump shoes. Yeah, right. It's very, very American, isn't it?
But I mean
Gold.
that's what his whole campaign's done off, right? And we're in a campaign year, and it looks like he's going to be up against Biden again.
How much did you say they went
So
for?
a thousand pairs, and they were $400 US.
So this man paid 9,000 for a pair of Donald
Oh, did
Trump's.
he?
So maybe people were
Yeah,
selling them. Yeah, they were for 400
because it's
bucks and they've sold it.
because there's only a thousand of them. They'll probably go up in value, right? So it's roughly $615 Australian. only Trump, right?
Only Trump, that
Yeah,
man. It's crazy.
yeah. He's It'll be interesting to see what he does over the next, what, 6 months, is it, until they have their US election? Be interesting to see Trump's antics over the next 6 months.
Yeah, like I said, I saw a video. I was just like, really? But can't bring it up
Yeah.
on the podcast. But yeah, it's like.
To go from one man that we've spoken about before to another man that we speak about quite regularly, Elon Musk. Do you see his first Neuralink patient has come out and they've got some results from it?
I did see that pretty crazy stuff.
Before we get into this and we elaborate on what exactly has happened, option to get a chip in your brain, do you do it?
I'd like to see more people first. What do I, what is it getting me? I don't have. Well, I don't think I have brain damage. It's.
Gets all your drunken memories back.
Oh, whoa. I don't think I want that, mate. I'd rather not, bro. I'd rather not have the memories because I don't like the person I am when I drink.
Blackout
Yeah.
ready.
Would I get it? It
So
depends, like.
let's say it's safe. It's been proven to be safe and effective at using the internet or controlling internet through your thoughts.
I mean, that's technically what we're doing anyway. We're just using our thoughts to move our fingers to go through the internet on our phone. So it would be quicker.
I mean,
Get
they're soft launching us with the Apple goggles, right?
it. Okay.
Have you seen the Apple goggles?
The Vision Pro. Is that what that is?
I
Apple Vision
believe
Pro?
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people wearing them on videos and stuff and just.
Yeah. Augmented reality, right?
So. That's probably the best one that they've got. Like, I think Mark Zuckerberg was talking about how good it is as well.
So Apple, a working member of Apple pulled away and created their own like glasses, like version of it, something like a tenth of the price,
Right.
but pulled away and created their own augmented glasses. So
Really?
this will be a thing that'll boom soon. But like the big, they're big, like on your head, right? Like
Yeah. I
I
mean,
don't
they
know
got to
if I've
start
got,
big, don't they?
if I've got someone that I know that has them, I'll try them, but not for me.
Not for you. Why is that?
Not for me. What advantage do I get out of it? I think as a society and as a population, we're becoming more connected whilst being equally disconnected. Like we're becoming more connected at the same time that we're becoming more disconnected. Does that make sense?
What do you mean by
So
that?
like through the use of social media and like being able to put on goggles and be in the same room as your friends virtually, and like we're becoming more connected in that way. But like in terms of face-to-face interaction and actually like being in the presence of other people, we're becoming more disconnected. And I think that's becoming more and more evident in the youth of today, right? Like a lot of youth are spending less time around one another, gaming more, have like their friendship groups like all on their phone, and like all the communication happens through like a WhatsApp or a Snapchat or a I think we're more connected in that way, but it creates for very awkward humans in real life that don't know how to effectively communicate, read facial cues, like and I think that's only going to continue to happen with something like augmented glasses coming in or like a Neuralink or who knows where. It seems like technology is like it's going downhill at the moment. Like it's just a snowball effect, and the progression of it is happening faster and faster and faster and faster. And it's pretty wild wild to see and to be in this era. Like, has there ever been a time, like, if you were to take an iPhone, right? Like, stock standard iPhone. If you were to drop that in the middle of, I don't know, Leicester Square in London 50 years ago, people would legit think aliens. And now it's how many people walk around without an iPhone or a smartphone in their pocket?
Not many.
Yeah.
Unless
So
they're got yoga pants on.
yeah. But even then, the yoga pants now have pockets built into them, so you can store your phone in your pockets. So I think that's very much where we're heading, and I don't want to be disconnected in person. Like, you already know that I'm a person that struggles to communicate via a phone. Like, I really am an in-person operator, or I prefer in person and the connection that way. Like, I get a lot more feel from it, and I believe they've actually done a little bit of research on this. I wish I knew the study of connecting with someone via phone and connecting with someone in person, and everything is the same except for the release of oxytocin, which only happens in person. So you're still getting the connection, but it's not the deeper connection. Because oxytocin, love hormone, all right? Yeah. So that's it. That's interesting. I'd love to find the study.
So
Yeah,
with this
I think we're
augmented,
heading in that way. Yeah, so not for me, for that reason. Because I'd rather be like, okay, we're all going to get on these augmented glasses at the same time and act like we're watching, I don't know, the Super Bowl live. Why don't we all just get together, actually be in a room, whack it on the TV, and watch it live?
I mean, that's I'm all for, being in person and everything. But like sometimes you just can't. Like you're in
I mean, us
Queensland.
right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like this would be pretty cool if we had the pros on or whatever. Because Lex Fridman and Mark Zuckerberg did a podcast and it was the first time in the actual metaverse with the glasses. It's not the Apple Pro, it's his version, and it looked so
The
real.
Oculus.
It might be the Oculus, I'm not sure, but it was a pretty cool interview and it looked very real. So that I'm all for that. But yeah, when it comes down to like if you're next to each other and then you're in them, yeah, I don't know. It could help for people with like high anxiety as well, going out and meeting people. I think that's what a lot of these games as well have helped with kids with not being able to socialize at the start, and then they actually make friends online, talking to them and doing whatever, like shooting games and shit, and then talking to them, getting the confidence to then go out and talk to other people. I don't personally know
Does that
many.
happen though?
What do you mean? Oh, I'm
Does
sure
that
it's
happen?
happened. I'm sure it has. I'm sure it's
You
happened.
reckon?
Oh, well, I mean, think
Because it
about.
builds their confidence at building a connection online.
Yeah, but you're still talking to people.
Yeah, talking through a headset.
Yeah, talking through a
Because
headset.
there's no
You're
one
still getting
in front of you.
still getting reps in. Like
Yeah, I suppose.
it's better that and having a deep connection through that than it is than not talking at all. And then make it like, do you really think that either talking on a headset, like what's going to improve this person's life more? Talking to someone over a headset and making friends over a headset, or not talking to anyone and then going out in social situations and then being awkward as fuck. They still have to go out in awkward situations. But I think I would make the case that if they had that headset, they would feel more comfortable going out and maybe even having a conversation with someone. They may not start the conversation, but they may actually talk back. Whereas if they didn't have the headset and didn't know how to talk to other people, that they would actually, I think that they would be better off if they got some reps in of like making some sort of connection. Obviously, you can take it too far with certain things, but it's like I think it's a good thing. And it obviously with most things, there's always a bad. There's always a good and there's always a bad. Or there's definitely opposites, because that's what makes the opposites, that it can't just be one thing. Obviously, there's going to be a positive and a negative. But I don't know anyone that has one at the moment. So we're still
It's
far.
America.
America, exactly. So we're going to get the wave in like probably 5 years. How slow.
Yeah, see,
it all
I
is.
think I'm on the opposite side of the defense to you there. Like, I think if they create that little safety, that's box container where they're having these conversations online through a headset, whatever it may be, that's their little safety bubble now, and they don't want to leave that. But I can see the point that you're making as well. Like, at least they're getting reps in. Like, we'd much prefer people start working out at home if they're not comfortable going into the gym because they've got anxiety about going to the gym. Build your confidence at home, even though it's not the same as being at the gym. There's no one else around. And that way you're building a little bit of confidence to then go out into a gym and just do the home workouts you were doing at home, but in the gym where you've got the ability to then start looking at other people's exercise selection, maybe speak to a trainer, etc.
Yeah, think about it when you were young. I don't know if you ever used MSN Messenger.
I did.
Talking to girls that you probably never would have talked to at school, and then you actually have conversation at school. I don't know if that happened to you, but I'm sure it's happened to a lot of people of like just even just breaking the ice of like, oh, got the MSN now, I can talk to them. I don't think I'm awkward because I went on MSN.
Yeah, I would have thought you would have been the kind of operator to have the conversation first and then follow it up on MSN. I mean, that's always been the way that I've been, and I've heard people talk about if they're at a party together, they'll try and find someone on social media, follow them, and then that's like a soft introduction rather than just going up and dealing with the rejection. But on the counter to that, I'm like, yeah, sure, they're not having to deal with the rejection, but is the rejection potentially a good thing? Like, it le teaches you how to deal with being rejected, not winning, not succeeding, which I think is an important part of being adult. You're not always going to win at life. No
No.
one, not everyone's going to like you. So, is that part of the process? But I suppose if you
It's
still
the.
get a softer rejection if they don't follow you back. So I suppose you're still putting yourself out there, but it's just in a
Yeah,
softer
baby
way.
steps. I guess it depends on the person because the people that would, like, I guess they're like, what is it, Gen Z or whatever, have been brought up with phones. Like, I didn't get my phone until I was in high school. So I would have been, I don't
Same.
know, 13 or 14 or something. But these kids, some have them at like,
10.
yeah, even
Yeah.
younger than 10, like eight or nine. And if even like just using the phone, not like specifically for messaging or whatever, but it could just be like even for games. So they've been brought up with just using the actual technology themselves. So it's the same back in the day when people thought that the TV was going to ruin kids as well. Of like,
True.
so it's, oh no, nah, you got to read the newspaper and shit. Or, and then after the newspaper, it was like the radio. And then the radio went to the TV. And now the TV goes to the phone. And then the phone to the internet. Now the internet to, the goggles or whatever it is. There's always going to be something else. When you think there's not going to be something else, there seems to be always something else afterwards. Like, you never would have thought like after TV there would be something else that we would have. Like I obviously was what 13 when the phones came out. So that's pretty standard. But maybe our parents wouldn't have been like, oh, what else do you do apart from sit on watching the TV? Like, don't sit too closely or else it'll fucking fry your eyes and shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I think there's obviously gonna be risks involved with it. But it's like you kind of got to adapt, and like we're very adaptable beings, and who knows what it'll be like. Like, I think you can obviously you start off with it, get all the hype out of the way, and then you decide whether you want to in like have it or not. And then you could obviously decide with your kids. Like, there are people out there that don't let their kids have social media, and I can see why they would say no to that, especially at a certain age. And I think the same will be with the headsets as well. Like, depending on the worlds that they go in, like if they go into the meta or whatever it is. But it's just like it's so individualized with personalities of will this help me or will this hinder me in moving through life? Because I can see some positives and I can also see some negatives. Like, just it, I guess it depends on like who you're listening to as well. Like, that can really affect you, like if you've got good parents or if you've got good friends and family and stuff like that. But some people can just go down the wrong road just ever so slightly. And I've definitely been there, and I know people that have done it, and you just need like a little bit of a kick up the ass of like, what are you fucking doing? Like, why are you spending all this time on this device, like at home doing nothing, not socializing. And then, yeah, I remember there was one guy in my class in either primary school or high school, and he didn't watch TV. I thought he was the weirdest thing, weirdest thing, weirdest person ever. I just never heard of it. But there are people out there that just don't even have TV and they don't want that outside socialization. Or I guess people now, it's funny because people now really don't watch TV, do they? They watch like streaming services and go on social media. So technically, you know, he was ahead of his time, but he probably is not on social right now.
Yeah, see, the only counter I have to that is radio, right? Radio you could listen to and you could still do other things. TV, when it came in, it had a schedule of certain shows at certain times and people would just turn on the TV for certain times. Then you've got your phone. Now, if you're on your phone, you have to be using your phone, so you can't be immersed in anything else. Whereas you could be watching TV and doing something else, but because your hands are occupied with your phone, you literally can't be doing anything else.
People watch the TV and
Goggles,
use their phone, man.
yeah, they're not watching the TV though, are they?
Well, there you go. Oh,
They're using their
bang.
phone. Yeah.
If
They're
something's
using their
bored, you know, ad comes on or whatever.
The next level up from that is goggles. Like, that's even more, you have to be present and in the goggles, because what's happening in the life around you, if you don't know what's happening in the life around you. So that's the only counter I have to that is, yes, as technology has advanced, we've always been okay, but it's becoming more and more immersive, and it's becoming like they're figuring out the psychology of it more, and they're making it more addictive for people to stay on these things longer. So that's where my only concern comes, just for society as a whole, not for me. I don't feel as though I'm a major risk of this. I'm not a doom scroller. I've set boundaries. That was one of my big keys for this year, set boundaries around social media use, and I'm n nailing that. So I don't think it's an issue for me, but for society at large, I think it is going to become more and more of an issue. And we are moving down a path of the plugged in and the not plugged in. And I think there will be very few that will be not plugged in majority of the time, and then plug in, use it, get a little bit out of it, and then unplug. Or the constantly plugged in that will go do some not plugged stuff and then plug back in.
Yeah,
I
you'd
don't
buy
think
it.
those, yeah, I don't think those people will exist too much. I think majority of people will either be plugged in or not plugged in. And I don't know what that means for society, what it means for people's health. Like, yeah, I just think we could go on a slippery slope, but who knows? Everything's just evolving so rapidly. It's just a interesting conversation discussion, I felt. And I like that we've got slightly different viewpoints on this. Like, I think that's beneficial to hear two sides of the same coin.
I think so too. It's because it can go either way, that's the thing. Like
Yeah.
it's not this is the thing because it's we're thinking about in the future what would actually happen and what
Yeah,
people would
yeah.
do and I don't think the whole world has internet at the moment anyway. So
No, vast majority.
when you
Vast
get their
majority.
satellites up there, they might, but
Yeah,
yeah.
see, for me, I will say no to a Neuralink, no matter how safe it is, no matter what benefits I can provide. A chip in my brain, like,
Well, if I started to
no,
get
thank you. Not for
Alzheimer's,
me. What
maybe, potentially.
if it
If
prevented
I,
Alzheimer's?
well, if, well, doesn't the chip, like in the future, isn't that what they want to do? Like either reverse it or at least stop it from getting worse? Isn't that what,
Via a link.
yeah. Yeah,
I have
the,
not heard
that's where they
anything about
first.
that.
Well, that's where they first started with, wasn't it? With like neurodegenerative diseases and that. That's what it all came down to, why they were doing it. And then they can work.
Interesting how a chip could stop that happening.
Oh, yeah. That's far out of my league.
Yeah. That is a scenario where I would consider it. Like, if I was going down an Alzheimer's dementia route, then
Yes.
that is an occasion that I would consider it. I'd still be hesitant about it, and I'd probably go back and forward on it, probably because of the Alzheimer's and probably because I'm indecisive.
What was I
But
doing again?
yeah, exactly. Why am I getting this chip again? Yeah, interesting conversation. Anyway, let's go back to some health and fitness stuff, yeah? Although that is health and fitness. Like, that's
It is.
mental
It's
health, it's
health.
physical fitness, it's whether you're indoors, whether you're outdoors, like it is an aspect of health. So yeah, I just thought it was interesting to bring up off the back of old Trumpy boy and his shoe sales. Anyway, couple of random facts, and then let's answer
All
some
right.
questions.
So, 1 to 2% of the Earth's people have red hair, and most of them are in Scotland, about 15%, and then
Really?
the other 10% is like in Ireland.
Ah, there you go. Scottish and Irish, my heritage.
You go.
Yeah. Now, you speaking about redheads reminded me of Summer Heights High. Have you seen it?
Of course.
Jonah
Yes. He's a fucking ranger,
Takalua.
miss.
But he was racist.
You're on your
My
period
random
or what,
fact.
miss?
My random fact for you, you're more likely to die from a cow than you are a shark.
Yep. Love
Cows
that.
kill more people per year than sharks.
And vending machines.
Vending machines kill, people shaking, trying to get things out, and they fall on them, crush them.
Yep. A lot of things. I remember doing a whole thing of what is more deadly than sharks, and there is just so many things. Like people
Yeah,
falling
it's.
off ladders, I think, as well. It's just,
Yeah.
I've been getting a lot of shark videos lately.
Oh, there you go.
Of,
And I bring up a shark fact for
yeah.
you.
Oh,
What's
beautiful.
interesting, there's a guy at the gym. I've got a bit of a bet with him at the moment. He feels a bit uncomfortable wearing a singlet, not in the fact that the singlet is uncomfortable, but he feels uncomfortable when wearing a singlet in the gym. So I made a bet with him that if he wears a singlet every day for 30 days, that I'll wax my legs. Now, my legs, for the people listening, have never been touched. They are rather hairy. Today marks he's halfway through the 30 days. And he's doing little things like he's carrying a spare singlet in the boot of his car. So if he happens to forget one morning when he comes out, he's got a spare singlet in the back of the car that he can hop on. But it's good, man. It's a good little bit of banter in the gym. And
Course.
yeah. Anyway, he's got an irrational fear of sharks, like irrational. I
Yeah.
initially said to him, I'm like, what do I have to do once this little bet's over? What do I have to do for 30 days to get you to go for a swim with me in the ocean? He's like, it would never happen.
Yeah. And I bet you want to shave your legs so you can run faster as well, don't you?
No. Wax my legs. Do you know how painful that'll be? These hairs have never been removed, mate.
But you can speed run fast.
I'm giving myself exposure therapy and I just sit on the couch every now and then. I just rip a couple out
Oh,
randomly.
jeez. Get some band-aids and shit. Fuck.
Yeah. But I mean, I know exactly what it feels like. I used to have footy tape around my ankles and footy tape on thighs and thumbs, and I know what ripping hair out of your skin feels like. So I'm fully prepared for it.
Yep. All right.
Anyway,
All good.
just reminded me of him and I thought I'd bring that up. Anyway, question time.
Stop. Hey, just before we get to the questions, if you've enjoyed this episode or previous episodes, could you please share it with someone that would get value from it? The only way to grow the brain body movement is if you share this. It's just a few tap of the fingers and it would truly mean the world to both of us. Thanks again for listening. All right, let's get back to the show.
Question number one. If I can only train early in the morning, does taking an EAA or BCAA supplement break my fast?
So first you got to, I guess, determine what you mean by fasting. So some people might have certain rules around fasting themselves, but like technically fasting is not consuming any calories, and EAAs and BCAAs both have a small amount of calories in them because they're amino acids. So technically you are breaking the fast, but does it matter? Not one bit. Like, why are you even worrying about it? Like, are you trying to go for autophagy and all this kind of stuff? Then don't take them. But I've had this question previously as well, like, and because they're like, gosh, oh, it's gonna break my fast and stuff. It's just like, well, what do you want to get out of the fast first? Like, is it mental clarity? Is it autophagy? Or is it just because you've heard on the internet that fasting is good for you? Either or, if you train in the morning early, you don't need to take it. If you want to take it, that's fine. But like, if you've got enough protein throughout the day, then you are basically just pissing these supplements out.
Yeah,
Literally.
that's where I was gonna go.
Yeah, you are
Like,
literally pissing it up. Well, I wanted to address it
what?
first because people do still do take this shit, and it's just like, well, if you've got them there, if you want to take them, fine. But like, it's not going to do much. Like, if you're,
Flavored, if you're eating enough protein, it's
yeah,
flavored water.
it's ex and I used to, have, I'm trying to think of what the one I used to have. It was so delicious, and I'd have it throughout the whole day.
Extend?
Extend, yes. And I'd have it in
Yeah.
a 3 liter milk carton that I had. And I would leave it, like when I was plumbing, I'd leave it outside, and I could just see the milk carton expand a bit as well. It was filth, but like it tasted good. And I was like, oh, definitely getting some microplastics in that for sure. But
Well, now you know, but you didn't
yeah,
then.
probably not. But I know about BCAAs because, you know, all the marketing and stuff. But yeah, doesn't really matter. I wouldn't worry about even taking any of that shit anyway. If you are worried, just get fucking a small bit of protein powder.
It's got all the BCAAs and AAAs in it that you need.
Exactly. But if you want to train faster, then also do that. Like, you need to define your fasting as well. Like, why are you actually doing it? Are you just trying to lower your calories? That's a good way of doing it, but you could literally just take a half a scoop of protein powder or something, just something in. Like, I don't like training on a fasted stomach. Very rarely I do. I usually have like a scoop of protein powder before I train, especially if it's early in the morning. By the time I get to the gym, it's all good. But yeah, I wouldn't even worry about it.
Majoring in the minors. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like, why are you fasting? But more importantly, why are you taking EAAs or BCAAs in the first place? That would be what I would address. If you've got sufficient protein, you don't need it, and you're literally just essentially pissing money into the toilet bowl.
They've asked for EAAs because they heard BCAAs aren't good, so they need to get the essential amino acids instead of, you know, just the branch chain.
Again, great marketing by the fitness industry.
Yeah, take a mechanism and then run with it. Just fucking eat an egg, mate.
Yeah. Question number two, should you still try and hit your step target on training days?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, you could do whatever you want, but I like to hit a certain step target each day, so then I know I've got everything consistent. When you start going up and down with certain things, especially if you're trying to track like where your calories need to be on certain days, or if one day is like 10,000 and then when you train it's like 2,000, well, you're literally only training for an hour. You're not burning that many calories. So technically your daily energy expenditure is going to go down for that day as well. And I see this a lot when people are in a calorie deficit. They're like, oh, you know, I'm not eating as much, so you're not moving as much, and it's just harder. But if you've got a certain step count, why wouldn't you hit it? Like, just keep it consistent. Obviously, on the weekends, I see it dip the most on the weekends, so that's where you got to really look out for it. Because I'm just having a lazy Sunday and Saturday, and you see that it just dropped to like 2,000, 3,000 calories, and then the other days are like 10,000 plus, and you're just like, well. Those other days, you probably feel better if you actually did work out on it's if you did hit your step target. Like, you just feel better. Like, you could, even though it averages over, it is still good to have it consistently every day. So then you're not fluctuating in your energy levels as well. Because I see a lot of people on the weekend too, they're like, don't feel as good on the Monday. Could be because of sleep, could be because they're not moving as much, could be because they're not training. And even if they are training, they're not moving to actually help with blood flow with nutrients around the body. I see that a lot too. They'll hit a leg session and then just do nothing after, and they just sit there and then they're just sore for like 4 days. Where it's like, well, if you did like a little bit of bike or at least go for a walk or even just some body weight squats, just get some blood pumping, it will recover a lot better. Especially if you hit your sleep target as well, not just the step target.
Yeah, so I'm glad you addressed the physical aspect of this because I first train of thought went to the mental. So I would like you to maintain the habit of hitting your step target just for the habitual mental aspect piece of this. Like, this is something I do every single day, bang, tick, bang, tick, bang, tick. Whereas if you're fluctuating from day to day, it's you're breaking that habit. And it's a habit that you want to form, otherwise you wouldn't have the target in the first place. So sure, you can balance it out over the week, but ideally it's like a protein target, right? You have a protein target for a reason because it's the target for you to hit. So you want to be hitting that consistently most days, or at least close to it most days. So I would look at it more from the mental piece of being consistent and then being like, yep, that part of calorie deficit, health, well-being, whatever it be, is taken account for every day if I hit this target. And it could be 6,000 steps a day, it could be 8,000 steps a day, it could be 10, 12, whatever it be. But just for the mental aspect of like, yep, ticking the box. And you'll get a little sense of accomplishment when you achieve it. Whereas on the days where you train, you don't get that sense of accomplishment. Although you would get it from training, but why not double up and get two?
Yeah. And everyone, not everyone, some people know the
You've said
feeling.
every. You've said that twice. You've gone everyone and then gone not everyone.
Not everyone. I was like, some people, well, I try not to speak in absolutes. I kind of catch myself
I
sometimes.
know.
So some people find, especially myself, that when either I don't train or I don't go for a walk, I don't have the energy that I usually would is if I got up and trained or went for a walk. Like you just have more energy when you're moving more. Like you sit there and you do nothing, you just feel more tired when like your days off of work sometimes feel like you've been working for 20 hours straight because you just don't have that energy. It's like the same with like sleeping in too long. Instead of getting up early and you feel energized, you sleep in a little bit longer, you're even more tired. Like it's a trip. So I fucking hit your target. So then you have less variables to worry about.
And that's what I mean with the mental piece. You don't want to have, oh, could I have done this? No, you want to know that with certainty, I've ticked that box. Bang, tick, tick, tick.
It helps also, like, as a coach, knowing that everything's consistent and it's just like, okay,
Yeah.
well, you've been hitting your steps, you've been hitting your protein, your calories aren't where they need to be right now. We need to adjust this or something like that. It's because then you're like, oh, how many, like, no shit, you feel like shit on the Mondays because like you do like 2,000 steps over the weekend and didn't train or whatever. So it's important. And then yeah, less variables the better when it comes to shit like
Doing nothing is exhausting.
that. It really is.
Yeah. Think of a travel day, like flying. How exhausted are you? And you've just sat on a plane for
Yeah, you
a
just haven't
flight to
moved.
Europe.
Just
Yeah,
haven't moved.
exactly. Move your body, shuttle some nutrients around your body, shuttle blood around your body to muscles, organs, brain. Like, move your body.
Move
Question number three. Do I need to drop my protein goals while cutting? I'm 5'1", so when cutting, my calorie budget is pretty small.
This is hard when you do have a low calorie budget. I don't like dropping protein at all.
Nah, not at all.
So usually the protein target that you have is the protein target, whether you're bulking or cutting or maintaining. It's just easy just to keep it roughly around there. You've obviously got ranges. So I like, between 10 to 20 grams either side of the range. When you're cutting, it's probably more important to have more protein than it is less, just due to you're cutting calories and you risk losing muscle mass. And that's not what we want. So we want a safety blanket of, okay, I've got enough protein here. I won't lose as much muscle, or I won't lose any muscle, especially if you're training. Like training is going to be the biggest one. So make sure you're actually training and sending a stimulus to your muscle to say that I want you still. Like send it some love letters. You need it. You need to keep it, on tap. But yeah, but it is. Yeah. I think the question also comes from my calorie budget is small. I can't hit my protein. Personally, I think it's because you're choosing the wrong foods when you're cutting. A lot
That's
of
the route
people,
I was going down.
yeah, a lot of people, they're like, yeah, I'm like going out, I'm having all these foods, and they're just a little bit higher fat and they're having like carbohydrates and stuff a lot more. And the protein is just like at an adequate amount when they're at maintenance or slightly bulking. And then when they cut, they're just cutting the portions down, but the protein goes with it. And then they're like, well, I'm not hitting my protein now. It's like, yes, because you're cutting the protein part of it. You need to cut away either the fats or the carbs from your diet and change the food compositions, like from chicken thigh to chicken breasts, a salmon to a whiting or whatever it is, like 20% to 5% lean beef mince. Like these little things that it's pretty well the exact same food, but you're getting better macronutrient breakdown for when you're cutting. Because yeah, when you're at low calories, it's really hard to hit a protein target, especially when you're that small. 5'1". What's that?
Short.
Yeah, it's short. It's short.
I would never
Never.
sacrifice protein. No, I would never sacrifice protein, especially whilst cutting. If your calorie budget's pretty small, make those smarter food choices. So think leaner cuts of meat, like you said, instead of 20% beef mince, 5% beef mince. Instead of salmon, opt for a white lean fish. Instead of chicken thigh, chicken breast. Instead of white rice, opt for cauliflower rice. Like there's all these little swaps that you can make that save calories, and they don't cut into protein. So you're still getting the same amount of protein, if not more. So I believe that 20% beef mince compared to 5% beef mince is a drastic difference in calories, and you actually get more protein for less calories because there's less fat. So yeah, never sacrifice your protein goal while cutting because it's going to preserve your muscle mass and keep your metabolism as high as possible because the more muscle you have, the more calories you burn at rest. So make the sacrifices elsewhere, usually carbohydrates, sometimes fats as well, and just make those smart food swaps, leaner cuts of protein sources, and then opt for potatoes instead of rice because potatoes are more satiating. Have load up on leafy greens and include more vegetables in your diet. Probably have to sacrifice on eating out as much, and you have to prepare more meals yourself where you have control of the calories. It's the food choices of your whole diet that will make up your entire calorie budget. So look at all your food choices and try and make as satiating ones as possible. But also remember too that you're not cutting forever. Like you go into your fat loss phase, you hit your protein target, you do your cut, it's 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah, I know, I just got to get through 4 to 6 weeks or 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever it may be. You know there's a start and an end date, and then you can reintroduce more carbohydrates, more fats, and you'll have a larger calorie budget once you're in a position where you've lost the weight that you wanted to. So it's not a forever thing,
No,
but
it's
don't
not.
sacrifice protein.
No, and there might be some people out there. They go, Brad, Brock, I don't care about muscle. I just want to lose the most amount of fat possible. I like eating these foods. I'm going to put myself into a deficit. My protein might be low as long as it's, enough to live. There's going to be people out there. They're going like, I don't care about protein. I don't care about saving muscle. Well, then that's up to you. This is a podcast for people that want to get jacked and preserve muscle. And the thing is as well, it's the diet's going to be easier if you do have more protein
Yeah,
because it's going to keep you
exactly.
fuller for longer. So even though you could potentially have the lower protein because it's going to be easier or whatever, maybe initially, but once you keep going down, like if you have a lot of weight to lose, as the weeks go past, you're going to get hungrier and hungrier and then potentially binge. So have the habit now of having better food choices with the higher protein. So then the diet is easier and you've got those habits long term for sustainability. Obviously, cutting calories isn't a sustainable act because if you kept ca cutting calories and kept dieting, you would die. So obviously, you need to get back to maintenance at some point. How you get there will determine, and what you eat will determine like your body composition at the end. So we are all for higher protein, but obviously you can potentially have the lower protein if you're not worried about like keeping muscle mass and stuff. But I would urge you just to rethink that stance of like it'll put you in a better position later down the track if you had that muscle still, because what will happen is you'll lose the weight and then you won't look the way you want to look because you've lost the muscle. So strength train, keep the protein high, and you'll find that you will look better, maybe even at the same weight. Who knows? So it's very important. But like I just wanted to caveat that saying that no, you don't need to always have high protein, but we strongly recommend doing it due to all the reasons that we've listed.
Now, to throw another caveat on top of that, let's say you don't care about muscle and you're not cared like worried about body composition. You just want to get to a healthy weight, and you're like, "Oh, I'm not really worried about protein." Eating more protein will have you lose more weight. I'll repeat that again in case anyone missed that. Eating more protein will have you lose more weight, regardless of whether you want to retain muscle mass or and you're just purely focused on weight loss. Because if you consume 100 calories of protein, 33 of those calories will be spent in the breaking down of the protein. If you consume 100 calories of carbs, it's something like 4 to 5 calories. And if you consume 100 calories of fat, it's something like 2 to 3. So you're burning 30% more calories in digesting the protein. So you're not actually going to be getting that 30% of those calories from the protein. So you will actually get faster and better results simply by eating more protein. Now, personally, do I drop my protein goals while cutting? I do the opposite. I lift my protein goals whilst cutting for that reason I just mentioned and for the preservation of muscle mass because I want to have as make sure there's a surplus of protein coursing through my veins to maintain as much muscle mass as possible. So I'm very big on a high protein diet and majority of the targets I set are at the higher end of a protein range because inevitably some people miss it some days. And then on the days where they miss that higher end range target, they're still in a good range and an optimal range as per the scientific research. So it's something to, I don't think you should skimp on. And we're in a society currently where not just being overweight is an issue, but like being under-muscled is a serious issue because people go through these yo-yo dieting cycles where they're not getting sufficient protein, they lose weight and they lose weight. That's the key word. They're not losing fat, they lose weight. So they lose muscle, glycogen, water, and fat. And then when they go off this crash yo-yo diet, they gain glycogen, water, and fat, and they don't gain the muscle because they didn't create a habit around exercise to build the muscle or retain the muscle. So, yeah, protein is the cornerstone of pretty much any healthy diet, in my opinion.
Yeah, and people might be wondering, yeah, I eat protein. I have avocados and nuts and broccoli and shit.
Nah,
When we
bruh.
say protein, it's protein rich foods. So when you look at per 100 grams or whatever, like on the back of a label or on MyFitnessPal, the protein per gram of calories makes it a high protein rich food. All right. So 4 calories for protein. And where people might get caught up with is the grams of fat. Fat is 9 calories per gram. So say you had like 10 grams of protein and then 9 grams of fat. Technically, there's more fat in that food than there is protein. So it's just another thing to be wary of like that's not a high protein meal. Like that's not protein rich. That's a fat food. So it's whatever the calories are the most because, in that example, 9 9's 89 and then 4 10's 40. So it's double the calories for the fat food, which is probably a nut somewhere. So just be
Yeah,
mindful of
like a
that.
peanut or something.
Something like that.
Okay, final question. Question number four. How can you balance a physical job and working out without going into overreaching or overtraining mode?
Yeah, we've spoken about overreaching and overtraining mode, and we believe mainly it's under recovering. So I used to have a very physical job as a plumber in construction and get up at, 4:30 every day, get on the job site. And then after I finished, my 8 to 10 hour day, depending on what I was doing, I would then have a coffee and then go straight to the gym nearly every single day. And I never overreached, I never overtrained due to making sure that I got to bed on time. So a lot of these physical jobs, obviously, you're wrecked throughout the day, and then you want to train on top of that. It's really focusing on the recovery aspect, eating enough food, eating enough protein, like we just spoke about before, because it helps in recovery. And when it's like, I remember being in trenches, like getting pushed over by the boys because I've just done a massive leg workout. Like I wasn't recovered. Like I would have gone out on the weekends. So that's obviously another thing of like drinking, heading out on the weekends. I was always fucked Monday, maybe even Tuesday. So yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about the physical job. It's like be smart about it. Like if you're like digging all day like I used to do, I would shovel with my left hand and then I would change to my right hand. You know, a anything that was doing one arm, I try with the other. But it's like you're not always doing it. Like you're not always fucking physical. And if you are, you would know when you get to the gym of like, okay, well, my shoulders are a bit sore now. I might just do some legs today. And then you just work it out. You go into the gym, you're like, what's sore? If everything's sore, obviously you need to recover more. Like use that as a feedback loop, but you can definitely do it. But you need to concentrate on the recovery more than the, oh, I have a few, like I hear it's like even my dad, I'm just, like, day you come to the gym, he's like, no, I've been working all day, son. Like, I don't need to go gym. Like, I hear that a lot when I said to people at work when I was plumbing, like, I'm going to gym later. He's like, oh, you've been physical all day. Like, yeah, but like, there's so many different muscles that I didn't use today that I can use. Like, when I was digging, yes, I was using my back, but I was barely using my chest. You know, I was barely using my, like, yes, I lifted up some stuff, like some pipes and that, but I didn't work my legs out that much. Like, got out of the trench, like, what's that, one step up? Maybe two? Like, people think I have a physical job, but like, that's more like the exercise component of it. It's not actually like targeting a specific muscle that I want to do in the gym. So, yeah, I'm not doing many bicep curls at the fucking job.
Yeah. I think this question is purely focused around training. Like, ignore the physical job because you have a physical job. That's something that obviously isn't going to change. It's always going to be physical. So you need to tailor your training around that. And if you're currently overreaching and feel sore and beat up, listen to your body. Your body's telling you, hey, you're doing too much at the moment. Pull back a day of training, or pull back your intensity, or pull back some volume. And then the time that you would, let's say you do an extra day, maybe put that into preparing some more nutritious food. Maybe get some extra work done during that time that you'd usually train on that extra day. And by getting that extra work done, you can go to sleep half an hour extra early at night. Or that extra day, you can go and, I don't know, sit in a sauna for a bit. Like, I don't, the physical job isn't the issue, because that's going to remain the same. So that's always going to be there. It's either you're not recovering, or you're training too hard, too often, or with too much intensity. So that's what needs to be addressed. Listen to your body. Your body will send you a signal, and you could strip it right back. You could do your physical job, and then you could go, okay, I'm going to train one day this week and see how you feel, and have your checkpoint with yourself, like on a Friday every week, and you check in, because that's when the traditional physical job work week ends. Check in on the Friday, how do I feel? Or check in on the Saturday morning, how do I feel? Oh no, I feel pretty beat up. So I was obviously doing too much during the week. Okay, so one session was too much. Or I feel good, like I could easily do another session today. Go do your second session that day, and then try two that next week during the week, and then assess how you feel on that Saturday morning again. Okay, I feel pretty good again. Do your third one on that Saturday, and then try and do three in that next week. And that's a way of gradually increasing your volume to a level where your body does isn't just like bang physical job 4 days a week. Like, slowly ramp your volume up, because your body will acclimatize to it. There's a I train a plumber gas fitter, and he's constantly cranking on wrenches and twisting shit, and his grip strength is out of this world. Like, he can just hold on to things for ages. His forearms are jacked. He's got these really strong, coarse hands. How does that happen? Because his body has adapted to him constantly doing this over and over and over for days, weeks, months, years on end of just cranking wrenches, using hammers, like using tools to lay pipe.
Yeah, I've been there, mate.
Yeah. Exactly. And your body acclimatizes to it. So that's the point I'm getting at. Like, all the blue collar workers out there, your body will acclimatize to the physical job if you're constantly doing repetitive things over and over again. Same with like people that run long distances. If you were to give someone that doesn't run 100 Ks, like a Nettie Brockman or something, if you were to give someone that doesn't run those kind of distances and be like, oh, here you go, run 160 K like how he did during the week, they'd be like, no chance. But because he's acclimatized his body to running those long distances, his body is more than capable of doing it. So it's all an acclimation thing. You got to slowly acclimatize your body to an increase in volume.
Yep. Just little
Adam,
bits by bit.
Adam nails it. You want to do the least amount of work possible to elicit the most amount of change. And that is so true. Like you want to maximize your return on investment and you want it to be as little investment as possible.
Yep. And that doesn't just go for physical jobs. It can also go for
Nah.
mental jobs as well, that using your brain or whatever job out there. Like when you're back at work after a holiday or something, you gotta really ease into getting back to work. And I remember it's like those Mondays, it was just like, whoa, just trying to get through the day. So, and then the last thing you want to do is go to the gym. So you could just go in there and just like, all right, no, I'm just gonna do, one exercise today. And you might feel good, and you might do a couple more. But yeah, you gotta really concentrate on knowing how you're feeling throughout the day with your body, of like, what sore am I mentally prepared? Like, do I still want to be in the gym? Like, these are the things that you got to ask yourself, because you don't want your job to affect your gym workouts as well. Like, if you're like, oh, I want to get in like five times a week, and then your job is like just not allowing you, and then you feel like shit, and then you start hating your job for it. And you're like, well, now let's just pull it back a couple of days. And then go, all right, right now in this season that we're doing, I can't work out that many times due to my job right now, just too physically. Let me get acclimatized to it. And now that I'm going further and further along, I can easily go five times. But it takes time. You can't just go 0 to 5, or else you'll be wrecked in the trench.
Exactly. And that's the whole point I was talking about was the acclimatization thing, like slowly acclimatize yourself. Like if you go from 40 degrees to 0 degrees, freezing. If you go from 40 to 38 to 36 to you probably don't notice it as much as the sharp contrast. Like the body goes into shock when you go from extreme heat to extreme cold.
And that's Celsius as well. Just
Yeah. Anyway, hope this helps our blue collar workers out there slaving away in the heat. But that's a wrap for today's episode. If you want your questions answered in the future, make sure you are following us at brain.body.movement, at Brad Dapper, and at Brock_Dalgleish. And you can ask us a question whenever we put up a sticker box or just shoot us a DM. But we just want to say thank you so much for listening to us. If you got any value from this episode, we would really appreciate it if you shared it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us so we can say thanks. We'd also appreciate it if you shared it with family and friends and left us a 5-star review. But before we go, we can leave you with a few things. Make your damn bed, get your steps in, and be kind to one another.
Cheers.